Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
At about 8:45, we were north of the George Washington Bridge, right along the Major Deegan Expressway. We were looking for a collision. We didn't find it. Now, since 8:48 at that time was my last report of the morning, we turned south back toward the area in the direction of Linden Airport. So we were at the GWB, and as we turned south, we all saw a flash and a fireball. And our pilot at the time, Arthur Anderson, said, "I think that was a plane." And I asked him, "Are you sure?" He's like, "No, I'm not, but I think it was." So he called out to the LaGuardia Tower. Our call sign at the time was 8 Bravo Quebec. And he called LaGuardia, 8BQ, "Did you just lose an aircraft?" And we heard nothing. And he asked again, and all we heard from LaGuardia Tower was, "Stand by, everybody." On the air, we were in commercial. And we come out of commercial, and I am, during that time, I am frantically calling on the two-way radio, trying to get a hold of somebody in the newsroom. I found out later that everyone in the newsroom was gathered in our news director's office at the time. We were on 57th Street, and our news director had one window that faced directly south and had a view of what was going on, and everyone was in there. So our morning anchor, Pat Carroll, at the time, pitches to me, and all I can do is go with what I'm seeing. And the first thing that I said was, "Something has happened here at the World Trade Center." And the rest of it was just trying to gather information as best as I could, but really just trying to paint a word picture as best as I could possibly do it.
I listened to this, and I hear in your voice what we heard from every New Yorker that morning, which was this kind of state of disbelief. People couldn't see what was rolling out in front of them, in front of their own eyes.
Yeah, we didn't know what we were up against at that point. And I remember being very focused on what was happening in front of me, very focused on the building. But at some point, I looked down at the clipboard that I was writing my notes on, and the clipboard was shaking in my hands. And my right foot, I would press down on a switch to key up my microphone, and my right foot, my right leg was shaking violently. And at that point, I said, "You can hear me all of a sudden shift and start talking about West Street and Canal Street." That I did that more for myself than anything else, to center me, because that's what I know. That's what I talk about every day. And I could relate to that. I had no idea what was going on in front of me at that moment.
In front of you and behind you, you made a turn, your aircraft, and you were photographing out of the rear of the craft, out of the chopper, and you captured what is today kind of an iconic image.
That image came from our onboard camera for one of the television stations that we were working with at the time, that our aircraft was working with at the time. We had gone in front of both towers, and as we got to tower number one, we could see the damage in front of it, but we had every bit of evidence to believe that it had been a plane that had gone in. Our next question was, if it had gone in, did it go all the way through and down to the street? And the only way that we could find that out was to go in front of the second tower. So we were in front of the battery, really kind of getting a look all the way around there. And then we made the decision that we had a better view where we were. So we went from that spot right in front of Tower 2 at the Battery and made our way north on the Hudson. And we were not even at, we were just north of Chamber Street, probably not even at Canal Street, when we're facing north at this point. The camera is pointing behind us. And I remember the right windows of the aircraft lit up. And our pilot turned around, and we turned around to just see debris flying everywhere. And we found out that the second plane made that final left turn pretty much right at the spot where we had been about 30 to 45 seconds prior.
You tell the story about going back to the airport and setting down and then hearing words on the radio you'd never heard before to describe what the situation was in the airspace over
there. We landed at Ridgefield Park. That was our old base of operations. We knew we could land there. We needed fuel. We were at the end of our shift at 8:48, so we needed fuel. We knew we could get it there. We landed, refueled, and took back off to Teterboro Airport, or at least talking to Teterboro's air traffic controllers, and we got about 50 feet off the ground, and we were told to land immediately, and our pilot was told the airspace has been sterilized. And we get back down on the ground, and our pilot says, can you repeat that, please? And he said, the airspace has been sterilized. And our pilot said, sir, forgive me, but I've never heard that phrase before. What does that mean? And he said, no, it means no one is going anywhere right now.
The fact that you came so close to hijacked aircraft, has there ever been a moment that has over the years caught up with you?
It's something I've thought of, but only just in passing. We didn't really think about how close we were until we played the footage back, which we didn't even realize that we had. But the footage that came from our onboard camera with the second plane coming in from the right side of the frame, that was on newspapers all over the world. And we didn't really think about how close we were until we looked at the footage and we actually saw the camera shake after the second impact, which was something that I did not perceive at the time. But that's something I haven't, maybe I'm just like trying not to think about that. But it's, you know, I don't think we really even grasped the enormity of what was happening until a little bit later that afternoon. We landed, of course, we could not take back off again. So we were following things from the ground at Ridgefield Park. The helicopter is on the ramp. It's hooked up to a battery cart so I could stay on the air. I'm trying to call my contacts, get as much info as I could. Arthur, our pilot, is trying to call the FAA, trying to get us back in the air. We're all trying to contact our loved ones also, but we're operating in a tunnel with no TV. We watched both towers come down standing on the banks of the Hackensack River, but we were really working with blinders on. There's no streaming video. There's no social media. We didn't have a television there. About 2 o'clock that afternoon, all of us there said, we have to eat something. And we had no cars where we were, so we walked across the railroad tracks to a small pizza place up the street from the old heliport that we were hoping was open. And the guy was open. We were the only people in the place. He made us a couple of fresh pizzas. We sat down, and he had a television in the upper corner of the restaurant, and it was tuned to one of the local news stations. That was the first time that I saw what everybody else had been seeing around the world. I had not seen it up until then. That's when I started to grasp the enormity of what was going on.
Tom, 22 years on, after all these years, your thoughts about the passage of time and the fact that we're here today talking about this after all that time?
Well, I think, you know, a phrase that's we hear associated with 9/11 quite a bit is never forget. That's true, but I teach a radio production course at Montclair State University. And for my students, that doesn't necessarily apply because they hadn't been born yet, if they were born in 2002 or later. that generation, if they had been alive, they have no cognitive memory of this. So what I do is I play our audio from WCBS in the classroom as it played out minute by minute. And I let this, which is really a moment in history, I let that history unfold minute by minute. And I find it very important for them to hear that because, again, they are the generation that now has no cognitive memory of this. It's in a history book. They've seen so many pictures and they've seen video but they've never listened to this. And I will always preface it the week before I play it. I let them know what I'm going to do. And I always tell them there's nothing salacious in it, but it is pretty intense. And if anyone wants to opt out, if anyone has a family member who was involved somehow and you'd like to opt out, let me know. I've had only one or two students do that. One of my previous semesters, one of my students came up to me after I played this in class and told me that his uncle had perished at the World Trade Center. And I asked him, why didn't you say anything to me? And he said he felt it was important in his uncle's memory to listen to that audio. And of course, I gave him my sincere condolences. But that student telling me that told me that that phrase, never forget, is not just words. And the stories of 9/11, no matter how many years later, have to be continued to be told.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.